to Keldabe Talk Radio, the official podcast of the Mandalorian Mercs. We're a costume organization dedicated to charity efforts around the globe, attending events in Mandalorian armor we've built by hand. Here on the show, we'll keep you up to date with the latest fan community news. Visit our website at www.mandalorianmercs.com.
Hello and welcome to this month's edition of Keldabe Talk Radio. I am your host, Crow, and with me on this very special episode, we have Pinocchio.
Hello.
Misha Kitty.
Hello.
Am Vindom.
Hi.
And our special guest of this month, we have Mandalore the Uniter himself.
Oh yeah.
All right, this episode is not only special because we have the Mandalore here, but it's also... by sheer coincidence, the first real episode of 2015 and the 60th episode from KTR, as near as we can all figure. So, milestone day.
Yeah.
Wow. we're still here.
Yeah. Most people generally know who the Mandalore is, obviously the leader and founder of our club, but let's just do some refresher course stuff here, and so... Number one, why did you make this club?
Well, first, I need to say that you never fully realize how weird it is to be called the Mandalore. It really actually does kind of make you feel kind of weird because it's like, okay, that's just I don't know. It just feels weird. Anyway, what made me start the club? Well, I guess I can kind of I can give a lot of credit for that to my wife. She dragged me to Dragon Con. We were going to go in 2005 and we just didn't have the money. She was still living in Florida and I was up here in North Carolina. We were traveling back and forth to see each other. And we just didn't have the money to go in 2005. So I promised her that I would take her in 2006. So at that time I wasn't really doing Star Wars costuming. I was still, you know, I was still doing some Renaissance costuming and I was, you know, building a period style Renaissance armor and that kind of stuff. And, so she, you know, we took some of our costumes with us down there and you know, just hung out, saw Dragon Con, which was my very first convention, which is kind of that's really, you know, it's trial by fire when Dragon Con is your very first convention. I saw, you know, when we were in the Marriott, I saw a bunch of people, you know, a bunch of guys dressed up in just, you know, Mandalorian costumes that weren't Boba Fett. I mean, they were their own costumes. They were their own characters. And my wife, Alicia, and I, we were big Star Wars Galaxies players. We actually had met through Star Wars Galaxies. And I had a Mandalorian character. We, you know, I had a guild that in the game that was a Mandalorian-based guild called Mandalorian Mercenaries, and our little tag over our head said Mercs. And I saw that, and I was like, oh, man, that's the most awesome thing. I wonder if I can find, you know, the parts or make the parts and bring my Galaxies character out, you know, into the real world. And so I did quite a bit of research online. There was a forum, an old forum at the time called Heroes, Villains, and Mandalorians, where a lot of our older vet members, original members, came from there. But, you know, I went out and did a bunch of research and saw that forum and saw where some other people had tried to get a group together, but they kind of just fell apart. They just kind of fell to the wayside and the groups never materialized. And I said, you know, if I could do it in a video game, because I had been, I'd played several MMOs over, you know, on the computer, Ultima Online and such like that. And I had started several big guilds. And I said, you know, if I can do it there, I'm sure I can do it in the real, you know, in real life. And you know, with everybody kind of out there between the Dented Helmet and Heroes, Villains, and Mandalorians, there was really no actual home that had good resources where people who wanted to do Mandalorian costumes of their own could go and you know, just kind of have a community with like-minded individuals there. On the Den Helmet, you kind of had to be a Boba Fett or a Jango Fett fan. I mean, they had a custom area, but it was very small. So, I said, well, hey, I'll just, you know, I've already got a web server space for my computer business, so I'll just I'll section some space off and I'll throw a forum up and, you know, put pictures of my own build up there and invite people to come, and we'll just go from there. And that's pretty much how it started. You know, it pretty much went from there.
And that was 7 years ago now? Just about?
Eight.
8 years ago.
Yeah, 2007.
All right. Second question that I've got for you. You may have heard some interesting sounds in the background. What are you actually building right now?
Well, right now I'm working on the computer view screen for our speeder for C7, this Mandalorian speeder that I'm putting together. That's based off of the Lego toy from 2013. Yeah, and that's my little. I've got a little motorized screwdriver. Like a Doctor Who sonic screwdriver thing here, and I'm putting this monitor back together. There's a little onboard Raspberry Pi I've programmed to run several functions on the speeder, so that's what I'm doing. I'm actually building Star Wars.
You're
bringing Star Wars to life.
That's
yeah, I'm making a Raspberry Pi. That's exactly what I'm doing. But yeah, I'm actually bringing a Star Wars toy to life as we talk here. So,
now, are we going to be able to like drive that thing around the convention floor?
Yes. Well, you won't be able to drive around the convention floor, but it is drivable. It you know, it's got a top speed of pretty close to 20 miles an hour. So, and so. It's car size. I mean, it's, you know, about 12 feet long by 6-7 feet wide. Yeah, about 7 feet wide. It holds two people in the cockpit, and then one can be on the turret, and the turret can be taken off, so it can be just a two-person vehicle. It's pretty neat, you know. It's going to be kind of like my armor. I'm going to have it so that it can be modified for different things, you know, different loadouts. So,
that's well, awesome. I've got a question for you, Tom. And
sure,
it's kind of something we've discussed over the years, and we've been doing this for what, like 5-6 years now. And when you first started down this road, and you know, you putting together a website to, you know, kind of gather people up for this hobby, could you have ever imagined it's grown to the point it has?
This is probably the single most question I get asked the most out of anything. Did I ever think it would be as big
as
it's
become? We've discussed it before, but since we're recording all that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, you know, it's actually always a hard question to answer. Sorry if it's kind of loud in the background. I got my 3D printers printing off stuff too. So, yeah, this Tony I'm in my
Stark.
Armory. So it's you know, everything's going on in here.
Jarvis.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's just a difficult question to answer, and I'll answer the best way I can. You never really start. I mean, you can never really start something like this. I mean, because it's not like a business where you're, you know, you're trying to make a living off of it or something like that. You don't really start something like this intending for it to become something big. You start it because you just want to have fun and you want to, you know, hang out with people that do the same things that, you know, you do, and share information and learn and teach and, you know, that kind of stuff. So am I surprised that it's gotten where it is? Not really. I'm not surprised that it's grown to where it is today. You know, that's just because, you know, we have such an awesome community of people, and we're, you know, even though, you know, we may not always get along with each other, we have a really good community, and we're, you know, we have a real good a family. I mean, it is like a large worldwide family, and that, you know, that kind of rubs off on people. And so, I mean, I'm not really surprised. I didn't really, you know, I had a roadmap of where I, and definitely where I want, you know, Mercs to be at. But as far as, you know, it being the size that it is and grown the way it's grown, I mean, I didn't really, you know, if I had known that, I would have probably started like a company that, you know, could have been Fortune 500 and got me a 1-900 number, and you could call me, you know, Mr. Cleo or whatever. So
I have a question Cleo. Then in talking about that roadmap that you just mentioned. What do you see coming down the line? We talk a lot on here about news and different things that are happening in the Mercs, and I know we'll get into that. But from your perspective as the Mandalore, what do you see happening with the club in the next few years?
Oh wow, that's another good question. Well, I definitely don't want this to sound kooky, But one of my long-term goals that I would like to see us have is an actual, like, a headquarters where I can move the stuff that I have that Merck's owns out of my house before my wife divorces me. You know, someplace that we can actually take that stuff and then build the stuff that, you know, that we use for some of these shows, and, you know, maybe, you know, be able to teach people how to make their own armor and something like that. I mean, that's honestly, I think that would be awesome, because one, no other group has that. Two, we're probably the only group out of the large groups that are structured to where we can do that. And you know, it's not a legal issue, or, you know, it wouldn't be any kind of, you know, issue burden like that. And three, it would be cool. I mean, just think if you had, you know, if you took, like, you know, if you had a week vacation, you say, hey, I'm gonna go spend a week up at the Merc's HQ and work on armor, or learn how to build props, you know, learn how to build stuff. Would that not be awesome?
It would be awesome.
It'd be really fun.
We could actually have that Merc's Con that we've been talking about since day one.
And have it in a place that, you know, that we actually own, that the club owns. I mean, I don't own it. Merck's is a registered 501c4, and as soon as that happened, the ownership of Merck's, you know, went away for me. I don't own Merck's. I'm classified as the stakeholder, but I'm not an owner. I don't get any kind of pay or profit, and I can't, you know. So it's, you know, something like that to me would be awesome, because it's for everybody that's in Merck's, and everybody that's a member, you know, it's there for them. I just think that would be cool. I you know, that's what I'm kind of hoping that we can do in the next, you know, maybe 5 to 10 years. It'll take a lot of work, you know. We'll have to do a lot of fundraising, but I mean, it's, you know, it's doable.
That sounds like you know, certain things you see in the art community, where you just have centers for, you know, different pieces and learning and things like that. It's not far fetched.
No, it's not.
That's doable.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's really gonna revolve around how much the members of Merck's want it to happen. I mean, you know, I'm only one person. It really, really relies on how much everybody wants to see it happen, and I think we can do it. And I can pretty much tell you that Lucasfilm would not have a problem with it. You know, as long as it ran the same way Merck's runs, where nobody's making any money off of it or anything like that.
So. Yeah, as long as we're not charging for tours.
Right. Yeah. We can't do that. You know.
I mean, a lot of the clans too, I know, are starting to get more into the mindset of having some of the large props. And I know some of the other groups, like the 501st and the Rebel Legion, have done that as well. But right. I know here in Florida, we have 5 or 6 larger props that are spread all over the state. And whenever we have a con, half the adventure is trying to get all of those items there. So,
oh, yes. I understand that.
It would be, I think it would be really amazing to have kind of one location, or even several bases.
Yeah.
Where these things were kept, especially because then multiple people could have access to them. They would be more accessible to the community. And, you know, if you wanted, like you were saying, if you wanted to spend a weekend to go up and learn, you could.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
you know, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, please.
No, like what Misha was saying was, you know, having a couple spread out throughout, you know, where, you know, I'll just say the United States. And whatever clans are kind of around, they're like, oh, hey, we're having a con coming up. Can we drive down and pick this up to go take it to the con or whatever for, like, the bigger props and stuff? It's kind of a sharing thing. Mm. You could do something like that.
Totally. I mean, you know, it's that's the cool thing about Merck's, is that because we are centrally organized, the club owns the props that, you know, that the club pays for. This big speeder, I mean, it's paid for by Merck's. I mean, I put a little bit of my own money into it, but not anywhere near the amount of money that Merck's has invested in this thing. You know, the other speeder from C6 is here, and that's owned by Merck's. So, you know, the big major props are owned by Merck's. We're gonna have to buy a trailer for this speeder.
Yeah, you're gonna have to get somebody with a CDL and buy a semi. And
oh, well, we got a guy.
Big Merck's semi.
one of our clan members here locally that lives down towards the beach, he's got one of those, you know, a nice classy mobile home. So we're just going to hitch it up to that for celebration. And I'm going to call it Merc's Force One. And we're going to hit I-40 and it's going to go across country. So we're going to be westbound and down.
I wish I could get up there to help paint this thing.
Yeah, you know, well, that's the thing. I don't think we're going to paint it at this point because we're kind of getting close to time. Well, what I'm going to do is one of my business clients is a engraving and printing company up in the city, not far from me, and I think we're going to have them do a vinyl wrap.
Oh, that would be good. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, because then we can have the weathering, you know, can be in the wrap, and you know, all the decals and everything are part of the wrap. We don't have to worry about all the fine, you know,
that's
the
a really
fine
good idea.
Yeah, and that way, if something ever happens, we just rewrap it. So.
That fair company enough. Gets to be the first company in the world to wrap a speeder.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Nice.
So.
Now, I've seen cars that people have put the Boba Fett Slave 1 vinyl wrap on with the weathering and everything. And like, okay, I'd drive that. All right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, you really can't tell that it's not painted unless you run your hand across and you don't feel the, you know, the dings and the you know, the pits and everything, so.
Yeah, I'm even after all these years, I'm still amazed at just how much intellectual capital there is in this group just for, you know, people who know how to work metal or the 3D printing or even this entire speeder project. It's like, we can build some really cool stuff.
Mm. Yeah, well, it's a lot of learning.
I have to say that I've been extremely impressed with not only the intellectual capital, but with the willingness of the members to help one another and to share that knowledge. Because yeah. I haven't seen that everywhere, and I have just been absolutely amazed. Anytime someone new comes in, pretty much any question they have, even when it's the ones that we've heard 12 times, 12 million times rather, even when it's the questions that we keep hearing, we may kind of go, oh, that question again, but we still answer. And I think that that's really wonderful. Whether you're wanting to learn how to make the armor, paint it, sew the soft parts, it is all there on the forums, but we're also willing to answer it again. And I just think that that's wonderful.
Well, and the creativity and imagination that people show in our little part of the, you know, in our little, I guess we can call it our little subculture of the Star Wars costuming culture. It's awesome to see the creativity and imagination that people have, because the one thing that you know, we kind of have that the bigger groups don't have is that we don't have to be so strictly adhered to a canon appearance. I mean, we use it as a base reference for you know, most stuff, but the amount of creativity that you get is just it's awesome.
Oh, well, it's really nice to see, like, when somebody starts a thread, like, oh, here's my whip and this is what I have an idea for, and then it actually, you know, comes to life, and along the way all the changes that they made or upgrades or whatever, and you can actually see like how they're working it out in their head and how things are going to work and everything. And yeah. You don't really get that with a stormtrooper. I mean, it's a stormtrooper.
Right. Yeah. Not that there's anything wrong with stormtroopers.
No. No.
No. I love having anytime we
that one really quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any troop that we can do.
I've always referred to these things as painted sculptures that you have to wear. Yeah, that's really what it comes down. It's a work of art that you have to be able to wear and walk 3 miles at Dragon Con in.
I say yeah. I dress up like an action figure.
Yep.
I get to say I dress up like my action figure.
I still think
Well, because you do. I mean, you really do. Yeah. It's you get to dress up as your action figure because you've made the character for the most part. It's your character. I mean, yeah, it's a Star Wars character, but it's your character. I mean, you thought it up. You thought up what it was going
to
look like. You know, you thought
you
up the name.
Make it.
Yeah, I mean, you basically turned yourself into your own Star Wars character.
highly skilled 9-year-olds at heart.
Yeah. You know, when I was a little kid, you know, I live in rural North Carolina, and my best friend lived a little over a mile from me, so it wasn't like I could just, you know, run next door and there was a bunch of kids around. It was pretty much just me. And, you know, I played in the woods, and I dressed up like, you know, G.I. Joe characters because I loved G.I. Joe when I was little, and I love Star Wars, too. We just didn't have Star Wars costumes back then. And,
G.I. Joe, it was easier because, you know, hey, let's just get some, you know, fatigues.
Yeah, camos. Some fatigues, yeah. And you're good to go. And, you know, I did that, and I built, you know, forts out in the woods and you know, these obstacle courses and everything. And then, you know, that was my childhood. Was I basically lived in a pretend world that I built because, you know, that was what I had. And to be able to, you know, live, or I guess make that a reality, you know, it's kind of like taking your dream and making it happen, because that's basically what, you know, that's what I've been able to do, is take my childhood dream and make it a reality. And everybody kind of does the same thing when they make their Mercs character, because, you know, they're taking something that they're dreaming up and they're making it real. So
I have a question for you, Mandalore.
Sure.
Going back to what you were talking about earlier with the with like the Denon helmet and the other communities, like, what'd you say, heroes, villains, and Mandalorians? Is that what that was?
Right. Yeah.
I've literally never heard of that. This is the first time I've ever heard of that. But going back to that and saying that there was all these different, you know, different groups that were kind of doing a few small things or whatever. What was kind of like the factors in creating the costume requirement list, and who helped you do that to, you know, to get everything up to snuff?
Sure. Well, when Mercs first came about, we didn't have any CRLs. The first, I'd say 2007, we really didn't have any CRLs. You probably don't. Those their pictures are out there.
I remember.
Yeah. I remember. There are pictures. In fact, I still have the actual. I have every member application up until we started doing them on the form mod on the forums. But every application that ever came in over email, I still have those. And, you know, I go back and look at them every once in a while because it's, you know, just going back and look at what, you know, how we started and where we're at and how. But, you know, we didn't have any CRLs. We had people join that had, like, a helmet and some chest armor, and that was it. You know, there was no real – there. You know, there were –
here's my jogging pants and my running shoes, and I got a helmet. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, they would have – maybe they had, like, a pair of Dickies on and like, some – you know, they had the bracers made out of soccer pads, and they had the, you know, the catcher's plate – the catcher's shin knee armor and all that.
And surprisingly, we still get that.
We actually do still get that in the
Every absence. Now and then, yes.
Yep. It's a rarity, but it still happens sometimes. But, you know, we had – I mean, that's what people had. I mean, that's all there really was back then. There wasn't the amount of people making, you know, Mandalorian costume parts back then that there is now. You know, you had the people that made the really good stuff like Boba Maker and Cruiser and Fett Pride and those guys. But they were – it was so expensive – that you had to, you know, have a lot of money to get into it. You couldn't just buy, you know, standard Mandalorian plates. You had to buy Boba Fett plates, you know, and they were extraordinarily expensive. So, you know, the advent of being able to just go out and buy, you know, Mando costume parts really didn't come about until Mercs came about, because they just, you just didn't find them. You know, people just weren't making, the popularity wasn't there for them to be made. So, you know, we had people join that just, you know, they look like a soup sandwich. but that was cool because that's all we had and all we knew. And, you know, there were a few of us that actually had, you know, full kits, and, you know, we'd tell people, you know, well, this is how we did this and this is how we did this, and tried to pass all that down. But, you know, there really was no standard of quality until 2008. In 2008, P.J. Rendell joined Mercs, and he joined as Jang Skarada from the Karen Travis Clone Troopers books. He did a kit that was based off of Jang's Legacy. I think it was his kit from Legacy, but from the Legacy of the Force books. But anyway, he became our first personnel officer, and he and I basically, you know, sat down and came up with the original CRLs, which were still pretty, you know, there really wasn't much to them, but it was better than what we had had. And then they pretty much went from there. And every year they, you know, we try not to get them, you know, we try not to change too many things, but some things just have to change over time. And we try not to make it, you know, explosive or invasive. But, you know, as Brian will tell you, as Pinocchio will say, you know, we just see bad, we see so many bad habits that the only way you can stop those bad habits is to just basically not allow them.
Right.
Yeah, and we really started in 2009. That's when it really got going, when we started introducing the CRLs, and ever since then it's just been a constant increase in quality. And it's wonderful. It's been great to watch, you know, coming from kind of the beginning stages where anything goes to where we are now. You know, the stuff that we turn away now is still sometimes so much better than what we were all doing in 2008, 2009, the early times, just because that's what we had, but we had to tighten it up, and it's great. It really is.
Oh yeah. Oh man, the people that we, you know, that don't get approved first time up, I would say, you know, at least 85% of them are light years better than the first, you know, applicants that did get approved back in 2007. There's no way I would be approved in my Mark I kit by
Same
Merc
here.
Standards.
Oh God, no. Neither would I.
There's just no way. I mean, there was just
looking.
It, you know,
I'm looking at the pictures now.
Well, you probably had a better chance than me though, because my stuff was just it was very, you know, I was a bigger guy back then too, and my plates just, they were fiberglass, they had no give, and they stuck out, and it wasn't fun. So, you know, it's actually kind of neat going back and looking at, you know, how much, you know, you yourself progressed over the years. So yeah, I mean, I'm glad that our standards are the way they are, and that we do have standards. And, you know, yeah, I don't like having to tell people or having to vote, you know, because I do vote on every member still. I don't like having to give somebody a no vote, but, you know, most, I would say, what do you think, Brian? About 90% of the people that apply stick it out?
Yeah. Most of the people that apply, we see them again. It's very rare that someone gives up. I mean, sometimes it takes two or three tries.
I was three tries.
That they generally get in. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, if I were to submit with the stuff I had way back when today, I'd be, you know, redoing it three times.
Yeah. Well, I'm taking a look at the stuff that I got in with. And, I mean, I joined up in fall of 2010. And, I mean, there's some stuff like my armor was fine, my helmet was fine. You know, I had, you know, elements on my thing were fine, but I'm looking at it and I'm wearing, first off, Digicam ACUs.
I remember the Digicam you had.
Yeah, that, that got grandfathered out like 3 months later and I just switched to a black flight suit. I also have like a tactical drop holster and like, just Home Depot work gloves that are, you know, They're Home Depot work gloves. I know you can get away with them now, like if you do stuff to them, but I didn't do stuff to them. Like, I'm looking at this, I'm like, no.
I'm looking at the gloves that I had at the time. There was some, they were fingerless gloves from, I can't remember where the hell I got them, but the ones underneath were gardening gloves from Dollar General store, and the reason I had the fingerless ones on top of them was because they had little flowers on the back of them, so I had to cover those up.
Oh wow! Well, yeah. You know, but the thing is
that's
back
what we
when,
had to do.
but back when, you know, back when Merc started, the quality wasn't really something that we weren't looking. You know, we weren't out there hard charging for quality. You know, the highest quality. You had to look a specific way. you know, we just wanted to have members to have people hop in the group and you know, the one of the things that I talked, you know, with the early council about way back in the day was, you know, yeah, as the group ages, you know, we can start tightening up on certain things, but right now, you know, quality is not one of those things that we need to, you know, we don't need to turn people away or else we're going to get a really bad name to begin with, you know, and once you get a bad name, it's hard to get away from it. So, you know, it wasn't really about turning people away. It was about opening the doors, letting them come in. We all learn how to improve ourselves together, and then we all advance together as a group. And that really seemed to work well. So,
yeah, so something I've said it on this podcast before, is that you show up, you know, dressing as Boba Fett, but you stay for the community and you stay for the people.
Yep.
Yep.
That's what it's all about. When, you know, when you get tired of building helmets and painting them, it's the people you stay for.
Oh,
cause
definitely.
My God, the talent in this
group.
Yeah,
exactly. It's just nice to sit back and watch what some of these people do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, every now and then, you know, someone will come out of left field and you're like, oh my God, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. It just happens.
There's been some people, you know, that got approved and they were on the, you know, the official member thread, you know, and I'm like, hold on. So I go back and I'll go to their whip and I'll watch that whole, or I mean, I'll go through all those pages to see where they started from, because I'm like, this is an amazing kit and I want to know what they started with. And it's nice to do that we have such a huge, I mean, you know, we've got over 1,000 members now, and it's like, being able to go back all the way back then and see the actual evolution of a lot of these characters and where they've come from, especially when, you know, like, you know, Mandalore, you've got, what are you on, like Mark 17 now or something? Is that
Yeah, right. Well, I'm trying to get Mark 6 done for Celebration, but I don't think it's going to happen, but trying.
Yeah, so, I mean, going back and seeing your first one to what you have now, you know, and a lot of us have got to watch that. And now the people that are coming in now will be like, well, this is when you get your Mark VI done, they're going to be, well, what was the other ones? You know, what were the other ones? What did they look like?
Yeah.
Well, it's just really cool that we can actually evolve like that, and everybody can actually change. We have and a lot of people have the willingness to add to theirs instead of just being the same thing, you know, forever.
Well, and I think that's the thing is I, you know, you rarely ever see somebody just make a kit and it stays the same. I mean, it's, you know, the first thing people do once they become...
Never happens.
Yeah, I mean...
Upgrades.
Yeah, that's the first thing people do. It's like, okay, now that I'm official, I want to join a brigade, so I've got to go get this stuff done, and I've got to go change this, and I'm going to go, you know, put this in my helmet, and I'm going to put this on my, you know, gauntlet or whatnot, you know? And that's just cool, because when you stop wanting to do that... Yeah. Then it loses its fun at that point. I mean, you know, that's why I continue to build, because I like to see how much stuff, you know, how much stuff I can make work on it. You know, then when I get to the point where I'm, you know, I can't make anything else work on it anymore, then, you know, I'm not going to say that I'll retire, but then I'll, you know, I'll focus on doing other aspects. You know, so
even when you get it to where you want it, it's still just refinement.
Yeah.
You're
exactly.
Always going to be refining something.
Exactly.
It's part of it.
Right. And then, you know, like, say, oh, something snaps or something breaks, like your knee or something. And then you go to fix it and you're like, well, you know what? Maybe this could, you know, be fixed. Or maybe I'll upgrade this while I'm at it because I'm already down here working on something. And then you just kind of go from there and it just snowballs.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm to the point now where I really like making armor for people. Don't ask me to make armor for them.
thank God that you do.
Yeah, please.
I'm to the point now where I really enjoy, like, I'm working on a set of armor for Mary Franklin at Lucasfilm, and just, you know, just the from the taking the concept drawing and then
step back again. You're working for armor. Okay, now if you need help with the paint job, you let me know.
Well, you know, it's actually kind of funny how it's all kind of coming together, because, you know, Zaz and I got together on this because Zaz gave her that helmet that he did, that Night Owl helmet he customized for, because Zaz had got with her and spitballed the idea of, you know, because Mary has this big, you know, affinity for gladiators.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm trying to incorporate some gladiator type stuff in the kit without making it look like a gladiator, you know, but making it look like a, you know, kind of an armored warrior. more armored than just the standard Mando. But anyway, you know, a lot of people kind of came together to make this kit happen. So I just did my latest StarWars.com blog post, actually, is part one of this armor build. So it's, you know, this is, I really get a lot of enjoyment out of building the armor for other people. Like, you know, they come and they say, you know, hey, I want an armor that looks like this, or you know, and I do commissions from time to time, not very often, but in special cases like this, I call it the gift of armor. When, you know, when we have our you know, honorary members or somebody like that who's been really helpful to Mercs, and, you know, if they want a set of armor, I'll build them a set of armor. If they tell me what they want, or they can give me a good idea, and they can give me a tape cast of their torso, I'll build them a set of armor, and I won't charge them anything to do it. I just do it because I enjoy it. You know, I want to see them enjoy it also. So,
well, I got to say this. Mary Franklin, you know, she's the person who's approved all the stuff I've done for, you know, Celebration over the years. And, you know, whatever I come up with next time, it's going to, you know, go to her for approval. So if you need help with the paint, you got it. I will move heaven and earth to make this happen. She is on my cool list.
I may have to holler at you.
Whatever you need, whatever you need, you got it. And it'll be done in a hurry, and you know the quality will be there.
Oh, yeah. Sweet.
She is definitely on the cool list.
Yeah, I would have to agree with the cool list. Right before, there was probably about 7 months before C6, her and I were corresponding on some things. I was going to try to get my Star Wars band to go down there and play at C6. And we talked. I sent her our album. I sent her pictures. You know, I kind of sent her the press kit type thing. And she was really, really open to it. And she was really excited for it. I mean, at least that's what I gathered from our conversations. And she just couldn't make it work with the space that they had, like whatever rooms, you know, that they had. And she was like, yeah, I don't think, you know, having an actual live band would work there. She goes, but maybe you could get a hold of the people for the after party. And then that, it never fell through. So, but she was really cool that whole time. And I was even like surprised that, you know, being from Lucasfilm, that she even entertained the idea.
Well, what a lot of people don't know about Mary is that she pretty much started her life in Star Wars started very similar to ours, where she was, you know, she's a member of a very old Star Wars fan group called Club Jade. Mm-hmm. And she's been a member of them for many, many years. And she was a member of them before she worked at,
you know,
at Lucasfilm.
I've heard of that. Is it?
I knew that. I've been on Club Jade for a decade.
Yeah,
or
it's,
more. Yeah, I mean,
it's not an easy group to get into nowadays. Mm. It's kind of, you know, and that's just because they've, you know, there's been issues and things in the past with weirdos that have come in. But yeah, she yeah, weirder than your normal Star Wars fan. But no, that's where she got her start at. So I mean, she's basically a fan of Star Wars just like we are, which is why she's so easy to get along with, because she's, you know, she's on our level. It's not like you're talking to some exec somewhere that's sitting in a chair and people are bringing them coffee all day. She's you know, she's one of the fan grunts just like we are. So she just has the cool honor of working for Lucasfilm.
Yeah.
So Lucasfilm, if you're hearing this, you know, hey, if you need help with you know, armor sets for Episode 8, give me a holler, man. I'll make a set or two for free. I'll do it for free.
I'm really good at getting coffee, so I mean, I'll take that.
I just, all I want is to just, you know, like if there's a cantina scene, I just want to stand in the background. I just want to stand in the background. I don't want to do anything. I just want to stand in the background and in my kit and you know, be cool like that. I'll make a
just,
couple.
Just
I'll
waving make, for the waiter. Just waving yeah, him over.
I'll make
That's
a couple
all you gotta
sets.
Do.
I'll make a couple Mando sets for the movie for free, man. And let me tell you, they'll do it. I don't care. You know, it's all good. I think
care.
that's good enough payment for me. I mean, hey, you know, pay me the minimum Screen Actors Guild salary for the day, which, you know, if it's $5 an hour, hey, I'm cool with that. So
I think it's a little more than that.
Well, I know, but I mean,
a lot
yeah,
of
I mean,
the extra stuff was like $500.
It's
bucks now.
It's $550.
$5.
Just get your SAG card. But,
yeah, you know, yeah. I don't care what it costs. I I'll do it for free. I just want, you know, just a quick blip.
It's awesome.
Yeah, just a quick blip in the movie, and that's it.
Like,
JJ,
there I am. There's my scene.
JJ, if you're doing Episode 8 and you ever listen to this podcast, hey, I'll do, like I said, do a couple sets for free for you. You know, we'll, a little tit for tat. We're good to go.
You know, at this point, I think most of us would just settle for, like, our hand being in the shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
That's my hand.
That was my glove. That's my gauntlet. I'm actually surprised that they don't come to the fan groups for extras like that, because, you know, you would think that it would be so cheap because they don't have to build costumes for them.
No.
I don't
get
that.
That's what I've been saying.
I know. You know, I don't understand that, because then they don't have to pay all those tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars on all these costume concepts and costume construction. I mean, they'll still have to do it for
the... those guys out of jobs.
Well, no, they still have to do it for the key
unions.
Yeah, there's pretty strict Screen Actors Guild unions at work.
Well, what if we all join the Screen Actors Guild?
It's, you have to have a speaking part in some kind of production to even get the card.
Oh, really?
Does this
count? Yeah, I was actually, I was an extra in a couple of movies, and believe it or not, it seems like it would be this super duper easy thing, but it's...
It is not.
It is not.
Always
and
not.
I would suspect that bringing in... I know Disney has done it before. Disney has brought in the 501st to do... well, of course, Star Wars weekends, right? 501st
right.
Revolution do that. But they've also brought them in for different parades and things. And I know that even just that, it is complicated. It's wonderful that they're able
Very.
To do it. But it's not super easy. And I could imagine that being in a movie like that, especially too, because think about how tight-lipped they're being about a lot of the elements.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
And we all like to talk, so.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
We say
look at what we're doing right now.
You're all so talkative. We're like, oh my god, do you know what I did?
I'd get sued for the confidentiality, you know, agreement 5 minutes after I walked off set.
Yeah, and in a day when we have, you know, cell phones where you can
Twitter and yeah.
picture, and I mean, I've already tweeted what you guys just said. So
the Facebook, you know, and all
right.
that. So.
I mean, Brian's already posting photos of his kit from 2008 on Facebook that we were just talking about. So.
All right. Next bit of Merc's news. We have the January recipient of the Order of the Oriramicad. This year, the first recipient of the order is Nasad Tal. The Ruzalor from Shornar of the Cadla Clan, the SVC, out in Arizona.
Yeah, Chris Sharp, Nasid Tal. His nomination was from a member out there that Chris had worked very hard with to get, you know, to get him official. It says, you know, Nasad Tal, you know, helped him quite a bit on his kit. Was one of the, you know, was the first one to extend a welcome, and help to offer, you know, help him get started or offer help for him to get started. He says that he goes beyond just being the clan's Ruzalor. He didn't tell me what to do, but he gave me options, instructed and advised on how to make my mental image become a reality, and has an eye for symmetry and armor. To the point where he can correct things without the need for ruler or measuring tape. You know, taught the guy how to do scratch-built weapons and stuff like that. So it really went kind of beyond what, you know, what a standard Ruzalor would do. He kind of took the next step and really was hands-on with this person, and to the point where, you know, the member felt that he deserved to get the award. And I've actually met Chris in person when I went out there in 2013 for Phoenix Comic Con, and it was, you know, he is a great guy, very passionate about Mercs, very very passionate about his clan, and you know, you can't really ask for more than that out of a member. But he really puts his heart and soul into Mercs and into SVC, and it's just nice to see that. So that's why he's getting our January Oriramicad award. So
excellent,
cool.
All right, well,
or
Simple Version, the App Team PSAs, the public service announcement, and I'm pretty sure we're referencing G.I. Joe on this one because knowing is half the battle. All right, but the effort is to do exactly what, like we were discussing earlier in the podcast, is to just share as much information as we can. And some of the questions that we get, they're pretty universal. And sometimes it's simple as, how do you build armor? How do you build a helmet? Just public service announcements and how-tos to try to help out as much as we can, so that even when you go to shoot your application picks, you know, did you get it right? Just a simple guideline to whatever you're trying to do to make your life easier, because we don't want to kick back an application. That's not our job. It's never been our job. Our job is to find a way to fit you in the box and get you in. And this is just the bits and pieces that help you do that. So some of the things that I've seen is that one of the first that came out is we're talking about the balaclavas and the ninja masks. One of our requirements is that you submit a face pick along, you know, a helmet off pick with your application. Well, we've been getting them quite a bit where, well, the helmet's off, but the balaclava's still on and we can kind of see some eyes. So that was one of the first PSAs. It's like, okay, well, ninja number 3 has just applied. Do we approve ninja number 3? No, we actually need to see your face to make sure that it's not some other dude's pictures that someone else just uploaded. And yeah, while that may sound a little crazy, it has happened in the past.
Oh, yeah,
people have tried to get through.
I remember
mannequin pictures.
Yeah, I remember one time when I was in the Ruzalore training, and someone had actually, like, they took the pictures. As far as everyone could tell, it was them, but their face-off picture was him on, like, was just a head and shoulder shot of maybe the guy on a boat.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah, and we're trying to put together
long walks on the beach.
Yes, everyone loves long walks on the beach, but we're just trying to put together just some guidelines. And some of it's, you know, how to take your submission photos. I've got one, and I'm going to go ahead and say this because we're recording this on January 21st. So on January 22nd, I'll bloody well upload this so you can hold me to this. And it's just an intro to weathering. Yeah. Because that's something we see a lot is, you know, weathering. Sometimes you see just some silver paint slapped on, and yes, it's
smeared
been through a
on.
Battle.
Smeared
yes,
on.
It's smeared on, and
yep.
Okay, so this is my promise to anyone who may have already heard this. On January 22nd, you'll see a bunch of photos and a bunch of words go up. Just an introduction on how to weather your kit, and I'm not even starting on armor because I'm a firm believer that before you go wreck your $150 helmet that some dude cast for you in another state, go find some cheap $10 thing and practice on it.
Piece of wood.
Yeah, go weather that. Go take a piece of plastic and make it look like weathered metal. So I took an old $9 droid tank from the Walmart clearance aisle and beat the hell out of it. Took about 2 hours, and you know, this is the kind of thing I've done at Dragon Con and whatnot before. It's just the simple intro on how to practice making your kit look beat up, been through a war, make it look
used.
Authentic. Yeah. Yep. And that's part one. Part two, I've already got a helmet that's painted. I'll paint a helmet. I'll put up all the pics. I'll tell you how it's done. Because again, the whole point is that we want to share as much information as possible so you can be better at this than we are.
Yeah.
I want to learn from other people. You know, here's what I learned. Go improve upon it so I can copy you. Mm-hmm. I'm lazy.
And guys and girls, don't take your app pictures, your application pictures at an event. Don't take them at a parade or at a convention.
Yeah.
Because 9 times out of 10, you got stuff hanging off that you don't realize. You've been trooping all day. Yeah, we get that. We get that. That seems to be a semi-regular occurrence, and and it sucks because most of the time, I mean, if the pictures were done correctly and at the correct time and place, they would probably pass first time up. So
yeah,
that's a big pet peeve of mine right there.
Yeah, and that's one of the PSAs. I've talked about it on the podcast before. I'll go ahead and do the PSA for how to shoot your application pics. What's the easiest way to do it? And I've said it before, do it early in the morning with the sun at the photographer's back. When you got nice even lighting, go outside. Don't do it in your kitchen. Your kitchen has very little light. However, you got a giant free light source called the sun. Take advantage of it. I'll write that one up.
I'm whatever a big fan makes of everyone's life easier.
Bathroom for app photo, yeah. Or your kitchen right in front of your refrigerator.
Yeah.
As many cats as possible in the photo.
Yep.
Yeah. Jumping on actually, you.
No, no, hold on. We actually add points for cats. No, we don't. Forget I said that.
Now that you've said that.
There's gonna be an there will be an application coming with 36 cats and it's just they're wearing My Little Pony pajamas. Let's go ahead.
I am going to go find a tiger.
And then they're gonna wonder why they didn't pass. You know, I heard this on Kill Dobby Talk Radio. I should do this.
I heard that if I submit my pics with a tiger
in pajamas.
All right, if you have a Siberian tiger.
You're just in. Don't even make armor.
Wait a minute. Is it an automatic pass?
You don't count. You're already in.
From me.
If you have a Siberian tiger.
Is it an automatic pass if I get a picture with a Siberian tiger?
If it's a live Siberian tiger and it's sitting right next to you and you're actually petting it?
Yeah, not in a cage.
Does it have to be Siberian?
Yeah, it has to be in Siberia. Yeah. I want to see Siberian mountains and like, you know, I want to see
the end of Spies Us.
The species. Can it be, it has to be a Siberian tiger. It can't be.
It has to be Siberian. Yep.
Yeah. I don't want no Indian tiger in there. It's got to be Siberian.
You hear that, Red Fist Squad? That's all you.
It's got to be real and live. It can't be like a stuffed one. It has to be.
So if we have any Russian form members,
coming in with like something else exotic, like a giraffe, perhaps a zebra.
I can go to the Tupelo Buffalo Park and get that picture. That's easy. Come on, work for it, people.
Nope. We want Siberian tigers.
How about an owl or an eagle?
Nope.
Those are not
Busch
Gardens.
Yeah. I know what she's thinking. I'm going to head to Busch Gardens. I'm going to get that picture, but no. Siberian tiger.
No, we have a lot of circus connections around here.
Yeah, that's why it's got to. Well, that's central. Why it has to be a Siberian tiger.
Well, if you had a picture of you surrounded by carnies and applied with that, I might want to pass you just out of sympathy.
Yeah. But,
please take me away from them.
Because you survived.
Totally going to get a picture with a Siberian tiger.
You want to see that. You're
already approved.
But I have another kit.
Oh, you guys. just don't change the name, then you don't have to reapply.
Okay, wait a minute. I know a guy.
Hey, I know a guy that knows a guy.
It's like the Sopranos all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Hey.
All right, so app team PSA done?
Yes. All yes. Right. And now, Tom, if I don't upload that damn thing by tomorrow, you can hold me to it and say, hey, you dumb bastard.
I'll try to remember.
Why did you do that?
I will try to remember.
No, it's happening tomorrow night. I've decided.
Well, this is true.
I'm going to Jacksonville.
Going to Jacksonville.
You could be doing what I'm doing and sitting here building a wire harness. You know, that's fun.
All right, so we have some Star Wars news. We were originally going to talk about the new Episode 7 trailer, but as that came out 2 months ago now, I think everything that could have been said has been said. Though I've seen a lot of really great YouTube videos about alternative lightsaber designs.
Oh man!
Episode 7 trailer dropped.
The best one is the special edition George Lucas made, or you know, the special edition trailer.
Oh yeah, the
one that's got like the million TIE fighters at the end of it. Oh my god! I almost used the bathroom on myself. I was laughing so hard.
The J.J. Abrams lens flare trailer is also really worth it.
It is.
But to move on to more relevant things, I guess. One of the big things is that Star Wars number one, Marvel taking back the comic franchise as they're now Disney, get everything under the Disney umbrella. Yes. That dropped Tuesday, I believe, or
14th.
The 14th.
And was sold out Wednesday, as I understand it.
In a lot of places, yeah. Like I work at a record store that also sells comics, and yeah, by Thursday, gone. And we didn't even have any of the variant covers.
Wow.
Yeah, I was about to say, were there like 63 different variant covers or something?
No, there was like 97.
Holy Lord.
I'm not kidding. There was like 97.
Yeah. It was like...
Because, well, I mean, some of them were kind of cheats, though, because some of them were like just sketch covers of that same cover. So
Yeah, some of them didn't quite count. But, I mean, big commemorative thing. I mean, Marvel used to have the original Star Wars comics back in the 80s.
Right.
And then, you know, as
With the giant green bunny rabbit.
Yeah.
Jackson!
And stuff like the popularity kind of waned, and eventually they sold it off. Dark Horse picked it up, ran it really successfully, really cool for many years. Like, all of the comics I have are Dark Horse era stuff. But recently they got sold, very slowly petered off all in, like, wrapped up all of Dark Horse's story arcs. And now they're starting fresh. And
yes.
If you can go find a copy, please go do it.
Has anybody here on the podcast read it?
I thumbed through.
No.
I've got five, dude. Five.
No,
actually, one I have to send down to Solus Ram,
mm-hmm.
because he couldn't find one of the blank sketch covers, so I picked up one for him, and I'm sending it to him probably tomorrow or Friday.
I trooped two different events for it, and they were kind enough to give us copies, which was really cool, but I haven't gotten a chance to read them yet.
I thought it was really, really well done. Because I'm huge into comics, so this was kind of like a big thing for me. So I think that the art was really good for what it was.
Yes, definitely.
He really did try to capture the likenesses. Sometimes, you know, it fell a little short, but the writing is really what sold the book. It starts off right away with, you know, kind of like a big rebel plan to, you know, get this thing from the Empire. And then, you know, it ends, and it's kind of like you know what happens because this takes place before Empire Strikes Back. So you know that these guys all live, but you had this kind of like sense of impending doom for these characters midway and at the end of the book. So that was kind of nice, you know, something fresh, because all the other books, it's like, well, they live, you know, because the Dark Horse, you know, universe tied in with the novels. So if you read something before but you already read a book, it's like, oh, he lives. So this way, you know, you've got this really cool feeling of, oh my God, something's actually going to happen to them. So,
I'm excited for
this series.
Yeah, I do have something to add to this for the Star Wars comics, and this is something I found out completely by accident. Just because I was actually looking for a copy of the Star Wars #1. I'm looking for the 80 Granov #1 variant with Boba Fett just punching the ground and making
the Iron Man one.
Yeah, it's a total Iron Man one. Hey,
which is weird.
Hey,
they did three Iron Man ones.
Yeah, but again, okay.
Yeah, why not?
He's a nice guy. He does great work. I want that cover, but I was researching it, and what's already happened is on Amazon, the Dark Horse comics, some of the ones that we're worried, oh, you're never going to see them again. Marvel's already republished like Star Wars Legacy, the first graphic novel.
Yeah.
It's already been re-released as of January 8th.
Why not?
Yeah, because...
Oh, yeah, they're going to be publishing Legends stuff still. I mean, they're going to be...
Yeah.
Yeah, they got the entire Dark Horse catalog.
Yeah. Yeah, so the panic that, oh my God, these will go away. No, they haven't. The ones that were sellers, Marvel's already reselling them. It took them a week to resell them.
Yeah.
Right. And they're going to do, I'm sure that what they'll do is like even like the mini, you know, stories, the 4 issues or 5 issues, whatever, they'll probably take a couple of them and throw them in one book that happened to do with whatever era. And then they'll just make money off that.
Well, Dark Horse did that for years. Like,
exactly.
The various Star Wars omnibi. They're all just the 2 and 3 shot comics.
Yeah. Marvel, excuse me, Dark Horse resold a lot of the Marvel stuff from back in the day. It's just gone the opposite direction. It's still available. Don't panic.
Right.
In the words of Douglas Adams.
I'll be there.
If anybody's got an 80 Granov cover, I'll take it.
All right. Misha, you did a troop. Did anybody else troop for that?
We did not have any events up this way. Too cold.
We had two on the same... We actually had... Actually, not two. We had two in the same area at the same time, so we had members at each troop, and then there was like an after event, and then we all met up at that one, so it was pretty cool.
Neat. Very neat. Yeah, I think the comic store that we did, they actually asked us back to do one for the Princess Leia and the Vader release, so
nice.
I was kind of surprised. So, but that'll be fun, cuz then, you know, it's just more comics that
more trooping.
I was gonna be there. I told him, I was like, you know, I'm gonna be here buying this book anyway, so I might as well come in costume.
That's right.
Yeah, actually, and speaking of the sketch cover variant, you know, just the blank one with the Star Wars logo, I'm taking that to Wizard World this weekend. I'm gonna get myself sketched onto the cover of a comic book. So
nice. Ooh, and it's gonna be Star Wars number one.
Yes, it is.
Nice.
If, of course, I can find, you know, there's like three former Star Wars artists and like two former Star Wars inkers that are going to be there. Mm. So I'm trying to go with like less than, I don't know, like less than $80. That's what I mean, like, you know, because it's a con and things are expensive.
Yeah.
So I got to, you know, buy other things. I mean, I guess I don't have to. I can just spend it all on myself.
Yeah, dude, do it. It's all about you.
It is.
In other Star Wars news, we've sort of known about this for a little while, that Billy Dee Williams was going to return to the galaxy far, far away via Star Wars Rebels. Though we didn't know what he was going to do, no one really... I mean, here on the podcast, we talked about it a lot. We figured he was going to be like Lando Calrissian Sr., or, you know, Lando's dad, Lando's uncle, or just some other remarkably suave guy that happened to run into the cast of Star Wars Rebels. Nope, he is Lando Calrissian again. Just, you know, young Lando. You know, Adventures of Lando Calrissian era type stuff. And unfortunately, I haven't been able to see the episode yet because I don't have cable. But, I mean, how can it be bad?
This is true. Like, it's got to be good.
I mean, it's...
Well, they have a little featurette about it, I believe, on StarWars.com that you can watch.
Mm-hmm.
Where Dave Filoni and Billy Dee Williams talk about it and that kind of thing, so...
Yeah. The episode is called Idiot's Array, which is not only just a funny title to start with, but, you know, is a hand from in Sabacc. It's like the winning hand, period. You get that, you win. But just, I mean, Lando, like, one of the greatest things about Billy Dee Williams is he's always been one of those actors where there's a game or a radio drama or an audiobook and someone was like, well, we should have Lando. Who are we going to get to voice Lando? He always does it. Like, he has always been about doing that character.
Nobody else can voice. It's like Morgan Freeman. Nobody can do Morgan Freeman except Morgan Freeman.
That's not true. That's not true.
Well, who can then?
Robot Chicken.
Oh God.
Oh well.
Well, okay, fine. But you like only Billy Dee can do Lando.
Yes, only Billy Dee, because Billy Dee is Billy Dee.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, he is Frost Lando Calrissian in the real life.
I'm still convinced that he just showed up on the set of Empire dressed in the Lando outfit.
Yeah, he just came with the half cape because he had it in his closet.
Yeah, I mean, like. He's like, I'm just gonna show up, and they're gonna be like, yeah.
I just pulled this out of my closet. I already had it.
That's just his walking around cape.
It's like he was probably like, look, I was just doing a commercial in the studio over, you know, across the road,
just walking the dog.
Just thought I'd come by and lend you my services, and boom, George Lucas was like. Yep. We can't do this movie without friggin' Lando Calrissian, without, you know...
Now, look at him.
Yeah.
Who else can go up against Han Solo?
Really nobody.
That's right.
Nope.
No one. Because he's the pimp.
Oh, he is. He's the player, the Mac.
That's right.
Who steals Han's clothes.
That's right. Who takes his wardrobe.
Yep. And his ship. Yep.
Like, I sold you out, I took your wardrobe and your ship and your co-pilot, almost got your girl.
And I'm gonna knock the antenna off of your ship.
Yeah, and now it's got to be replaced with some, you know, square looking.
Yeah, with a like a bow tie looking antenna.
Yep. Yeah, some
better reception
bow tie
that
phased
way,
array.
Yeah, better reception, more angles.
That's right. total phased array.
My two favorite characters in Star Wars are Lando and Palpatine, and Lando is definitely like, he's winning.
Yeah,
and especially Palpatine. Now that he's going to be on Rebels, like he's yeah.
Palpatine. You like Palps, really?
Oh yeah.
Wait.
I love Sheev. I love Sheev. He's cool.
Sheev. Sheev palpitations.
We've got to talk about this.
And now we move on to our Facebook Q&A. These are all questions that either came from the Mercs Twitter or the KTR Facebook page or the Mercs Facebook page, all asked to either just the podcast team in general or Mandalore here. I'll do the first one here. Because we always mention the Ori Ramacad here, and we always make a point to, you know, applaud people on every public forum we can whenever they get the Ori Ramacad. Rory asks, what sort of actions would a Merc have to do to qualify for the Order of the Ori Ramacad?
What someone would have to do to qualify, that's really up to the members that the members of Mercs themselves, because the members nominate Ori Ramacad members. It's not Ori Ramacad candidates. It's not necessarily something that the council does or that even I do. I mean, I have before, but for the most part, it's actual members within Mercs that nominate Ori Ramacad candidate. So that, you know, that's kind of an open-ended question there, but if you want me to, I can break it down real quick and as to what, you know, what most Ori Ramacad recipients are people who have what we say have kind of gone above and beyond what an average, you know, a normal official member does, by helping new recruits or by, you know, organizing events and just putting themselves out there for Mercs and for their local clan and for, you know, the members in their area. And that's really what being an Ori Ramacad recipient is about. It's about, you know, having a devotion to Mercs and to your fellow member and, you know, showing that and really being, you know, outgoing in you know, with your membership in Mercs. So
can I say something on those lines?
Hmm.
The thing I've seen, the question, you know, what would you have to do for this? I don't know that you can do anything specifically to go do that. Just do your best, because I'm willing to bet that most of the people who get that honor weren't expecting it.
Exactly.
No, they're not trying to get it.
Yeah, they're not trying to get something. They're just doing what they normally do. So just do your best.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't worry about awards or, you know, forum tags. Just do your best.
If you're trying to win Ori Ramacad, or if you're trying to become, you know, if you're trying to get it, more than likely you're not going to get it.
Yeah.
Because you're not going about it the right way.
Yeah.
You should never do anything expecting to get a benefit out of it. You should do it because you enjoy it, because you like to do it and you want to see it prosper. That's what makes an Ori Ramacad, you know, recipient.
And your clanmates will know if you're being genuine or not when it comes to helping out.
Yeah.
Right.
They'll see right through that facade of like, oh, well.
Oh, yeah.
He's just giving me a hand because he wants this, you know.
Yeah.
He's you know, making face because, you know, he wants that.
And you don't have to be in any sort of leadership position or on a support team or anything like that. There have been a few members of the Order that have just been just clan members. You know, they're just Mercs, just official members, but they've been so helpful to their fellow clanmates or other people in the clans, like a couple of the people, Nala Vokchi is a great example. When she actually, the stuff that she was doing to get her in the Order, she was doing when she wasn't even a Merc yet.
Right.
Yeah. She was just so helpful helping out over at CE2 that, you know, she was pretty much an automatic in once she got official.
Yeah, if you have any form of agenda, that agenda better just be, hey, I'm making good armor and I'm helping my friends.
Yeah.
If it's actually, oh, I want to get this, it's not going to happen because it really does have to be genuine.
Yeah. Guys don't go out and try and win the Medal of Honor.
Yeah.
No, that's correct.
It just happens.
Yeah.
So just be yourself and do the very best you can and try to pass it along to the next person. That's all we ask. I mean, that's all we can ask of anyone here.
Yeah.
Yeah, Han Solo didn't want the medal. He just wanted the money.
Yeah, exactly. Be a mercenary. It's in the title.
That's what I'm here for. That's what I'm here for is the money.
Yeah. Well, tell me where that's at so I can get some of that, too.
Yeah, I know, right? Come on. Yeah, just do the very best, make the best armor you can, and just go do as much as you can. That's all that really matters.
If your heart is into it, people will see it.
Yep. As long as it's genuine. If you have an agenda, it'll get sniffed out.
Was that a snap?
Yo, yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I heard a
just
snap.
Like that.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a Mando snap.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Kinder asks, do you have a certain process before you start a new project, or do you just kind of wing it? You know, a little bit of both. I mean, sometimes when I'm starting an armor project or a major prop project, I start by, you know, using my imagination. And especially with an armor project, sometimes I'll just start making a set of armor, a standard set of armor, on a whim. And as I'm making it, then I start seeing other things I want to put with it, and I'll start making new stuff, you know. And so it's a little bit of both. I mean, you kind of have to, in my personal experience, you kind of have to start with a little bit of a vision of where you may want to get to with the end product. But there is also a good helping of winging it along the way.
Yeah.
Because that's just the nature of you know, of building a costume or a prop. You know, you don't know everything you're going to have to do to it.
Right. And not everything is going to go as planned.
No.
Right. So I mean, you have a starting point, and then from there, you know, you will learn along the way, and you know, you'll have to kind of experience, you know, gain the experience of figuring problems out as they come up. So yeah, a little bit of both. It's really a little bit of both.
Yeah. I'll have like a goal, and then like the materials, and then everything in the middle is just made up as I go.
Yeah.
Yeah. The process is, hey, I imagined I would look like this, and then you end up somewhere kind of like that.
Mm.
Yeah. Basically
due to reality.
Yeah.
I think where I'm at now, I was pretty close to my very first concept sketch. Pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
I did change the flight suit after about 9 months of wearing the one that I had.
Mm-hmm.
And I changed my helmet because this was before that Night Owls were made when I first designed. So I think that's pretty much it, really. I fared pretty well, I hope.
Yeah, the first... Now, I can honestly say the first kit, if you look at what I actually sketched out to where I actually colored, yeah, it's pretty well on the money. But then your imagination gets better.
Yeah.
You learn how to visualize better, and then you just thought, what if I did this? What if I did that?
You see something that you didn't see before.
Yeah, and the third or fourth time around – you're probably going to be a little more disappointed because you have so much more imagination. And there's a term for that in art. It's the visual library. Mm-hmm. Your visual library has grown so much, you're not going to quite achieve it. But, hey, what you do get out of it is kind of awesome.
And you can't fit everything onto one kit.
No.
Trust me, I've tried.
you end up with three or four. Just, well, this one works with this. This one works with this. That's so.
You get diminishing returns. The more you add to it, the more complicated it gets. The harder it is to keep it together and to keep it functioning while you're wearing it. Yeah, it's you're better off building different kits than trying to add a bunch of stuff to one single kit.
Yeah, so if you have a process, the process is you have in your imagination a vision, then you do a napkin sketch, just some simple little thing. Then you go try to build it. You probably end up with disappointment, but you submit it and you make it better. And then you come up with a completely new vision. So it's in a constant state of refinement. That's the process. The process is dissatisfaction, moments of satisfaction, more dissatisfaction.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's the artistic endeavor. Just trying to get that last little bit of perfection. If you're still chasing it, you've probably been in this for a while and you're going to be in it for a long time. If you give up, well, that kind of sucks. We're going to miss you.
Yeah. Just keep at it. Keep at it.
Yep. Yeah. Just keep going.
Keep on keeping on.
Yep. Chase the dragon.
I think there's two questions here that would be really good for you, Mandalore, that I'm reading. The one from Chris here. I guess I'll just read it out loud. With the release of Episode 7 in December, how lenient will the Merc CRLs be in regard to any possible redesigns of Mandalorians that could possibly show up, like the redesign for the Stormtrooper?
Well, if it's a Mandalorian in the movie, it'll automatically be a canon costume. So I mean, it would be allowed. Now, as far as the allowance of it for customization, I mean, we would have to look and see. More than likely, it would probably be allowed. I mean, some things like the Sabine costume is a good example of this. We don't really allow custom versions of Sabine because her kit is so far removed from its current incarnation.
It's very unique to her character.
Right. It's very unique. It's so far removed from what, you know, we've known for many, many years as being the standard Mandalorian kit, that, you know, we don't really allow a customized version of Sabine. I mean, you know, some of the chest plates can be used and things like that, but it would have to match, you know, modern era CRLs. So yeah, I mean, you know, it's possible that some of the CRLs could change, but we don't know yet. I mean, it's hard to really answer that question without knowing exactly what is going to be in the movie, which we don't know that yet.
So like if we get a Mando that shows up with about 1,000 zippers on his suit, that's going to change everything.
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe yes and no.
We can have zippers again.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of going to depend. Like the Clone Wars gave us the generic Death Watch armor, which is pretty similar to the standard like Boba and Jango plates and stuff, and we allow that for basically anything. You can do whatever you want with that. But also with the Night Owl stuff, like if you're going to do like a Night Owl kit, I mean, you pretty much have to do a Night Owl kit, but, you know, you're allowed to use those plates with a different helmet, or you're obviously allowed to use the Night Owl helmet with whatever armor you want. So it could be like that.
Sure. Definitely. I mean, there's lots of different possibilities. You know, I'm not a big fan of sitting there telling people definites without knowing what we might be expecting. So,
right.
Anything is possible within the realm of possibilities.
Yep.
I think the other question this is easy for you, Mandalore, is Mandalore, when will I see you on Rebels? That's from Sabine.
I highly doubt that unless, you know, Dave Filoni just. For some reason, you know, I doubt that.
Yeah, in case he just starts running out of ideas.
Now, be honest. Right? Would you want to voice yourself?
Probably not. my voice is not very. I guess I could talk like this. I'm the Mandalore. I'm the GD Mandalore.
Are you gonna smoke a carton of cigarettes and then go into the recording booth?
I'm the Mandalore.
The Mandalore.
Hi, I'm the Mandalore. I'm here to do some stuff.
I'm the Mandalore. Wait, are you gonna talk
about
that?
It's an honored accent. I'm the Mandalore. I'm here to pump you up.
It's not who you are. It's what you do that matters.
Exactly right. I don't think I would voice myself because I'm just my voice is not that great. I've got a fairly heavy country accent and southern accent, so probably wouldn't work very well You know, but hey, you know, Finn Scheisse had a Scottish accent, so hey, I guess I could probably pull
it
off.
You could get away with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm the Mandalore.
I'm the Mandalore. No, when I think of stuff like that, it's like, well, would they do this? Would they do that? Why don't they do that? And then it comes back to, oh, yeah, they've got pretty much the, you know, they've got your Finn Jang, your Doug Changs, your Joe Johnston. It's like they have all these people on their, I can call them right now and get stuff list.
Mm.
Yeah. 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 Oh, I'm sorry, Shang Zhu, concept designer. But they have all these dudes. If they run out of ideas, something has gone horribly wrong.
Yeah.
Like they just have the entire phone book of ideas. Like, we got this, we got this. So if they call us, man, that's awesome. But on the other hand,
it ain't happening. Yeah.
See,
yeah.
I would both love and hate to be canonized, for lack of a less accurate term. Because A, it would be awesome because then automatically my armor is canon and I am the CRL. But at the same time, that means I could then from then on do nothing else to my armor.
Yeah, that's pretty much the boat where I'm at.
Because now
I'm a pimp. Yeah, it's like, I mean, it would be cool, and I mean, obviously I could do, like, technical upgrades and stuff, but my appearance would have to remain absolutely static.
Well, yeah. Didn't that kind of happen when Karen Travis put a couple guys in the book or something?
No, because she never described their
She gave, their like,
gear.
Colors.
Oh, yeah. Just the names,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But you know when Jason Fry, well, when Mark McKaylee drew the Mandalore the Uniter picture for Bounty Hunter Code,
mm-hmm.
you know.
yeah, I know. I'm still dealing with that one.
Yeah, and you know I'm having to change my kit. You know, make a few changes to go along with the picture, basically because Lucasfilm told him he couldn't use a fan's costume an exact copy of my kit, which is fine because that's a legal thing.
Because now you're making it, so you know, right. What the hell?
So you know it's now I'm upgrading my kit to resemble that, but once that's done, then you know I can't really go anywhere else with it. You know, it has to pretty. I mean, unless there's another picture somewhere down the line and there's some changes made. I mean, there'll be some things that I still carry over from my Mark V. I like my coat too much and stuff like that. But, you know, that's pretty much where it'll stay unless there's more art that comes up down the line. And honestly, I don't know that I'd want to be in Rebels. I kind of like where they put me, where Jason Fry put me in an area of the timeline that's not really focused on very much, and the story is of the character is really awesome.
Mm.
That I had no real vagueness. Hand in that.
You get that light, nice little vague gray area you can enjoy.
Yeah.
Well, the whole premise of Mandalore the Uniter, the armor that he wore, is the basis for modern Mandalorian armor. That mm-hmm. I mean, that in itself is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know.
You're pretty well immortal now. You're good.
I mean, that's, you know, that's...
you're good
that's,
now.
That's a pretty, you know, that's a pretty cool thing, you know, for the character to be at. So if that's where he stays, I'm happy with that. I really wouldn't want to see him in Rebels because that would be very contrary to the timeline he's already in. Even though it's a Legends. Even though Mandalore the Uniter is a Star Wars legend now, which I'm cool with that too, you know... I think he's fine where he's at. So,
you know, if you really start to think about it, I mean, we're all about the same age, so we've grown up on Marvel, DC, Star Wars, all these properties. But now we're at an age where the things that we do for our hobbies are influencing the things that influenced us as children.
Yeah, it's kind of wigging me out.
That's kind of crazy.
It's a weird causality loop.
It's a very strange thing to think about. It's like, wow, we're actually, you know, it's small. I'm not going to say that we've made the world. No, but in some little way that we've kind of nudged things a certain way. It's like, that's like the ultimate childhood fantasy.
Well, yeah. Well, it's like what I was saying earlier. You know, I kind of get to be what I imagined myself as a child being. You know, when I was playing and things like that. And that's something that most people don't get to do.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And it's to be able to do that and to be able to look back at your life and say, man, it's kind of cool to be able to dress up as, you know, as the hero that I wanted to be as a child.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. When you're 8 years old and you've got that toy Ewok village or whatever, there's nothing in your imagination that says, I'm going to be sitting in a restaurant, you know, 25 years from now, having dinner and drinks with Boba Fett.
Yeah.
And then a few weeks later, a nice happy little chat with Steve Sansweet from Lucasfilm, and then whatever goes. I mean, you have actually influenced your own childhood.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and like, then you've influenced someone else's. It's like, that's kind of unprecedented.
Yeah, never when I was, you know, 10 playing with my little Boba Fett figure and my AT-AT, because back then I could make Boba Fett drive an AT-AT, and I liked it.
Yeah, because he did that, because he was awesome like that.
But, like, I would have never dreamed that I was going to be on ESPN for 30 seconds riding around a baseball diamond with a team mascot.
Yeah. A commercial just hit for Pensacon where I'm in full armor shaking hands and I'm pretty sure hugging Captain Kirk. You know, it's just these crazy things like this never could have been imagined when I was playing with my lonely Luke Skywalker figure.
Mm. Yeah.
And since then some other kid is going to go have their experience with that. It's like, yeah, okay, we're complete and utter nerds, but this has kind of mattered.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, and that's right.
And that's one of the things I like telling kids is that, you know, you can grow up to be your childhood hero.
Yeah.
You know, you can grow up to do that. There's, you know, you don't let anybody ever tell you that, you know, when you're playing with your action figures or you know, your My Little Ponies or whatever, don't let anybody ever tell you that that's stupid and that that is childish and things like that, because that's the stuff that, I mean, those are the things that that influence the rest of your life. Yeah. You know, and every child needs their own hero, and when you know if the child can grow up to be a hero to another, you know, as an adult, be a hero to a child, there's really no other better way to grow up. There really isn't.
Yeah. No,
you know?
No way.
So. Yeah, and if you ever want to imagine if Mercs has had some kind of impact, all you have to think is, well, how many children exist today because of all this madness? There are people who exist now because of what has happened over the past few years. That's it. You're done.
Yeah.
Enough said. We're good now.
It's so deep. It's so deep. Yeah.
It's just insane to think about, but there are people who are alive because of this silliness. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it almost makes me feel a little bit like Barry White. You know?
You sang the song. You sang the song, and they came. And they make other little children who they're going to give lightsabers and blasters and armor to. And
our last question, put pretty simply, what is your favorite era for costuming and why?
So, favorite era? Modern.
Modern.
Modern. Boba Fett all the way. We're done.
Yeah, I'd have to say modern, because modern, I mean, it covers the Death Watch, it covers Boba, Jango, Legacy, technically.
It's the flagship era. It's modern.
And for me, the big thing is, like, I mean, I've wanted to do stuff like a Mandalore the Ultimate costume, or, you know, an early Crusader, or not early Crusader, but just standard Crusader.
Late
era Crusaders, that sort of thing. But my big problem is, especially up here where our clans are kind of small and we can usually only field 2-3 guys at an event sometimes, if you're just one dude wearing, like, leather armor and a sort of Boba Fett helmet, people might not get what you are right off.
And yeah, we're like S&M, yeah. S&M or something. Yeah,
I mean, yeah, like we're already kind of like, wait, what are you? I mean, we're getting better mostly because of Clone Wars and Rebels and that sort of stuff.
As we have said so many times, in Dave Filoni we trust.
Yes.
Yeah.
In bigger clans like the SVC, BBC, down in Talon and all those sort of places, like where you can have like 3-4 people there. If you have like a couple of normal mercs, or if you have a Boba Fett specifically, like that makes it so much easier for everyone to recognize. Everyone's like, oh, it's Star Wars, great. Like,
yeah.
Me just standing there, like, no one's gonna get it.
Yeah, late era Crusader is kind of our catch-all for something that doesn't fit anything else.
Yeah.
But looks somewhat Mandalorian. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks kind of Mandalorian, but the Dark Horse artists, they threw everything in there.
Yeah.
So it covers everything. So if it can't fit modern, if it can't fit anything else, it's probably going to end up there because, okay, it works.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they can be really, really cool. I've seen some really good ones.
Yeah, there really are, but it is kind of a catch-all.
Yeah, and I've walked around through, like, the two major cities in Maine, and people get it. Me just walking down the sidewalk, they're like, yeah, Star Wars, and people honking their horns and all kinds of cool stuff.
Man, look at that Power Ranger.
But, like, yeah, I walk around with like, an early Crusader and no context, I might get arrested.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll be like, it's a gimp! I like to think of late Crusader as the Windows Vista of Mandos.
It was there. We acknowledge
it's moved on. They stuck a bunch of artists in a room and said, hey, come up with, like, your dream character, you know? So they made, like, a character that's got, like, it's, like, made up of every other type of character that has ever been drawn. Also,
what about
Caveman
Boba Fett?
Oh, yeah. Now I gotta say this: you are so much more forgiving than I am, because when I imagine this exact same scenario, I say, "Hey, dude, you're gonna be getting $100 per page, and this is what you gotta feed your family on. You have one day to fill this page, fill it up," and they just draw whatever because they gotta eat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That tells you my interaction with the comic industry. But anyways, that's what I imagine. It's kind of sad.
Yeah, so modern all around.
Yes, modern. Yeah. And I'm cool with Legacy. If you got a cool Legacy kit, man, awesome.
Yeah.
And if you actually make a really good-looking Neo Crusader, yes, we'll be Facebook friends.
Yep. Please do be the first one.
Yeah.
Well, it'd be our second one. We already have one.
We do have one. Yeah. And he looks good.
Yep.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah.
So we want some more.
Yep. Well, that is all we have for this month's edition of Keldabi Talk Radio. Thank you for listening. Tune in next month. We'll be talking about a whole bunch of cool stuff, a whole bunch of Mercs news, hopefully some more new Star Wars news. They've been giving that to us quite regularly this year. We'll also be starting to hype up Celebration 7 out in Anaheim, which as of right now I should still be able to go to. So tune in next month. So on behalf of myself, Pinocchio, Misha Kitty, Am Vindom, and our very special guest, Mandalore the Uniter. Thank you for coming, by the way.
Yes, thanks for having me.
No problem. And on behalf of everybody involved in the podcast, thank you for listening, and have a good one.
Good night.
Goodbye.
Take care, all.
Bye. Bye. Billy D.
This has been a production of the Mandalorian Mercs Costume Club. If you'd like to learn more about the topics discussed on today's show, please visit www.mandalorianmercs.com. The Mandalorian Mercs is a worldwide Star Wars costuming organization comprised of and operated by Star Wars fans. Star Wars, its characters, costumes, and all associated items are intellectual property of Lucasfilm. Copyright 2009 Lucasfilm Limited. We hope you enjoyed our show, and we'd love to hear your feedback. Please email podcast@mercs.firespray.net. Until next time, happy hunting.